You're listening to All to Play For, brought to you by Joe and Coral.
Hello and welcome to All to Play For, brought to you by Joe and Coral, with me, Steve Sidwell, and my former Chelsea teammate and England international, Joe Cole.
Hello, Treacle.
How are you doing? You all right?
That's a good intro.
Listen, I
can't even remember where that came from, but it's great to have you, guys.
I think it comes back to the Only Fools and Horses days, yeah. Isn't it? When I was seeing that on the initiation.
Yeah. That was immense, City. Maybe we'll get that at the Christmas party again.
I don't think Essie and Drogba and everybody have really caught wind of it, did they?
Miles and miles.
Don't, it could come out. So, look, Smithy's off gallivanting up and down the country on Sky Sports duty. So, there's been a tactical change.
Yeah.
Subs been made. I'm in the hot seat. Are you happy, Gaffer?
I'm delighted, mate.
I'm on a free transfer.
Yeah.
We need to hit the ground running. All right. So, we need to start the show with a bang. Turn them early doors, get involved, get in their face.
Yeah.
No regrets.
Yeah.
A few cliches from the dressing room. How good were they, cliches from the dressing room?
Unreal. Loved them.
Sunday league cliches.
And no matter where you are in the country, like, who are you playing for? Even in Sunday league, like, it's the same. I'm talking the same shit. And when I'm playing for my Sunday league team, like, I see when I'm playing Chelsea, let's get in their faces early, lads.
Do you reckon that still goes on? In the top? Can you see Grealish going to Kev? Hey, Kev, listen. Turn them, early doors. Greenwood into Ronaldo. Ronnie, turn them.
Mate, I'll tell you, there's a few old school managers still lurking about in there. There is.
Well, look, we're talking about football, men and women's, so let's bring in our guest.
Yeah.
Our guest today is a Leeds, Doncaster, Bells and England legend.
Yeah.
Who's absolutely a top-class pundit now. She's made her England debut at age 17 and went on to make 93 appearances for her country.
Wow.
Winning the International Player of the Year award, not once, but twice. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the one and only Sue Smith.
Like that little introduction.
What?
Thank you.
That's what I do.
Well,
that's what I do. Well, I just get it and give it to the good players. That's I made a career of that. So look, is that the same in men's and women's dressing room? Them cliches, they still come out.
It's exactly the same. Yeah.
Really?
And I was laughing when you guys were saying it because no matter what level you play at, you always get that. So it's get in their faces, get stuck in early on. If you're like a midfielder, it's like, can you get the ball, give it easy. You know, it's those sort of things that no matter what level, whether it's male or female, those cliches
are there. Was you a shouter in the dressing room?
Not really, no.
No?
No, I was like, I like to have a bit of fun. I was quite relaxed. Whereas some people are just totally focused, aren't they? And they don't want to have a laugh and a joke. I was a bit of a dancer and like to have a bit of a joke. Yeah.
The one that always got me, like, no regrets. No regrets.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, no regrets. What's that about?
There was some nonsense.
There were some rubbish ones.
Yeah.
So, look, we're talking about the women's game. It's just literally going from strength to strength at the moment, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. And it's great to see. And I think, you know, looking back to when I first started playing, it was very much like I had to play for a local boys' team because there wasn't any girls' teams around.
Wow.
Whereas now there's so many opportunities for young girls to get involved early doors. They've obviously got academies linked to WSL sides, linked to championship sides. So they're getting good coaching from an early age, really. So they've got that good sort of structure in place that you can progress through. Same with the England team. I went straight I was playing for Tranmere Rovers, went straight into playing for the England women's team at 16, which was just a massive step up, you know, whereas now they've got the age ranges that you can go through. And so it's just getting better and better, and it's just great to see.
So Karen Carney was a similar sort of journey. She was in the England squad at a young age. How was that when you first, like 17, imagine, when I got in at sort of 18, 19, how was that going and walking into that dressing room with all the women?
Yeah.
Because you're still a kid, aren't you, at 16, 17?
Yeah, and it was tough even just like going away from home for like long periods of time. And you've watched these women and you've sort of, I suppose they're like your role models, aren't they? You go in, you're a bit like, wow, this is... But yeah, I think as well as a kid, though, you don't have any fear. You know, I just wanted to play. I was just like, let me have an opportunity and let me play. So I think I made my debut at like 17. But it was just a big step up from playing at Tranmere. Yeah. Probably not getting the coaching that we would, you know, they would have got now. To suddenly, like, every day you're getting coached. And it's just things like, you know, knowing the right things to eat and stuff. Because you're going from a completely amateur... at Tranmere, like paying to play, to then suddenly you're a professional setup in England. So
I just want to go back on there. You said like when you started, you went into a boys' team.
Yeah.
So how did you feel going into that yourself, and how was you accepted then as well.
Yeah, they were great. The lads really? Were great. Even now, I'm still mates with a lot of them. I still play five-a-side with a lot of them.
And what age was that?
I was five when I first started. Wow. So I went to watch my brother play. So my brother played for the local boys team. And the manager there was great. He was like, if she wants to play, let her come and play. And my mum and dad had took me to dancing and gymnastics and sort of girly things. And I was just like, it's not for me. Yeah. You know, just wanted to play football. And the boys were great. It was just a bit, I had to get changed in the referee's room. They got changed, and obviously the changing rooms and stuff. So
My little girl, Sue, she just played her first game yesterday. It was like... We was at a wedding Friday night, and she got a late call up for the boys team. And I'm like, can't miss it. Like, little girls, they won the game 8-1. She played right back with the boys, and she absolutely loved it. Like, and she's in year 7 now, and now I've got my two boys and Ruby all want to play at the weekend. Like, who do you go and watch now?
Wow,
it's unbelievable. But the boys were great with her.
Yeah.
And she actually got man of the match. Woman of the match.
Yeah. I think it gives you a good grounding as well, playing against boys. Like, I played up until I was 12 when I was stopped playing at to find a girls' team then. But, yeah, it's a lot of girls. I think Kaz would probably be the same. Rachel Yankee, you know, you speak to a lot of the girls similar age where they've started at boys' team and made their way through. But now there is opportunities for girls to go into girls' football, which... Because there's a few of my mates that wanted to play girls... Or they wanted to play football, but they didn't want to play with the lads, so they didn't have that. So they maybe went into a different sport. Yeah.
I had the same thing with my little girl, Emmy. She's 6, and she was in the garden, and then she started kicking the ball with the boys. Little left chucker as well.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, so my eyes lit up, and you know, like that Jerry Maguire scene at the end where the kid throws the baseball and he sort of looks at it to go, there's a pension fund there. And the wife looked at me and said to say, no, child, come on, I've got 3 boys, just give me the little girl with a pink dress, please, don't put football boots on her. But I'll be happy. But in terms of, like, obviously your girl and girls now, do you reckon that's down to the TV coverage that's getting exposed and it bringing it into early into schools? That's why they're getting involved?
Yeah, I think that helps. I think when you can see your role models on the telly, like growing up, my role models were all male footballers. You know, I didn't really have any female role models. There wasn't anyone to watch on the TV or... I thought I support Everton. I want to play for Everton. Didn't know that I couldn't play for the men's team. Yeah. You know, I support England. I want to play for England. But didn't know there was that journey or that pathway. Whereas now I think watching it like live all the time.
Yeah.
And they've got new fans, I think, which has been good. They've got a lot of new supporters that have watched the game for the first time and thought, oh, actually, this is okay. Because I think the progression on the pitch is massive, and I think that's down to being professional and being professional for a few years now. It's getting better and better, so people want to watch it now. I think that the TV coverage is great for the game and will only help it grow and inspire more young girls to play.
So I take my boy sprint coaching down at King's Meadow, and I took him down on a Wednesday and one night, and Chelsea ladies were playing Champions League fixture there, and I could not believe, like, the sort of focal point on it, really. The fans, the TV, the you know, there were smiles on faces. It's really big now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think that's what they want. They want it to be like a bit of a one club thing. So if you support Chelsea, you support the women, you support the men, you support, you know, the younger teams coming through. And Chelsea do it well. You know, they've got like good support. And I think that's where it needs to get better. I think they need more fans. So it's great that people are watching it on the telly, but get them to grounds, get them watching the game sort of week in, week out.
Yeah, Chelsea do it well, and I mean, I get accused of being biased, obviously, but they do it well. Yeah. I know Emma, because Emma's dad used to manage the pub team, which all the boys around our local area used to play in. So Emma actually helped him coach as she was a young, you know, like, and it was a proper rough and ready pub team. So Emma's been in football, and she's built up right the way through the levels, and she's done an unbelievable job, hasn't she? I think I've said it on here, Sue. I think she'll be the first lady to translate into the men's game. I think if the opportunity come, I think knowing her as a character, she could stand there in front of and more than hold her. I don't know if you know how well you know, but she's a strong woman.
Yeah, she really is, and I think, like you said, she's built her way up, hasn't she? And when you look at her coaching style and not technique, I suppose, she's very meticulous in everything that she does, isn't she? She wants to sort of do that little bit extra, get those little marginal gains, and you just think everything that she does in the women's game, that can translate into the men's game. I think if you're a good coach, you're a good coach, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It, like, some of my best coaches were men, you know, that got the best out of me, and I think it's good to have those in the women's game, male coaches, female coaches, and you know, why not have a female coach in the in the men's game? But it's just having that first one, isn't it? It's like there's a lot of pressure. If it doesn't work, then is that it? There'll never be any more. So
going on coaches there, you know, you've got Serena Wiegmann now that's took over from Phil Neville for the England international women's team. Do you think it's important that female coaches are in managers or head coaches of female teams, or like you said there, I know you said like the men can come into it as well, but what's your opinion, or anything that you preferred?
See, I don't think it matters. I just think if you're good enough, it doesn't matter to me at all whether it's I get the argument of if you have a very good strong female coach of an England national team, then it might inspire other young female coaches to come and do the same. But like Phil Neville did a great job, and you know, he obviously took England to where they were. Serena Wiegmann's hoping to take them that little step further and get them to go and win something. I think that's the next step. But if you're good enough, and I think, like I say, male coaches throughout my career, I can name a couple that have really got the best out of me and probably played my best football for them.
Sorry, Sidney, do you know, like, it's interesting because I remember speaking to Phil about, like, you know, the challenges, and it's so refreshing because to hear what you say, like, because it really doesn't matter, like, because he's whether it's a man or woman, but like Phil was like, he learned so much because he had females and he said he's got daughters, and he said he learned so much about women, and how he said it is different. He said a lot of it's the same, but there is difference. So it helped him develop as a coach.
What do you think the biggest challenge would be for a woman to go into that male environment from your point of view? So say for instance you took the shoes of a head coach. What do you think would be your?
I think it's the pressure, isn't it? I think it's the pressure. I think it's the scrutiny on them, because I think straight away it'll be like, wow, how are they going to do? So there's a lot of pressure early on. Yeah. I don't know, what would you guys think if a female coach came in? Would you feel that they'd have to prove themselves first?
I think there will be. Listen, we have to be honest, and you were stepping into a subject which is not something we. But there will be a group of people, men who don't want change, who would want it to fail. You have to say there will be a group of people that will be looking at. But that's, I suppose, it's like any manager goes into it, there'll be people who want them to fail. But particularly for a woman, I think there'll be a group of people that want them to fail. But there'll also be a groundswell of support, I think, from the majority. I mean, if Emma took a job, I'd be right behind her. This is brilliant, this is great, you know. And we're moving in that direction, aren't we? Yeah. As a society, we're moving more equality and things like that. And it's good, but you're right, it's the pressure.
Yeah.
The first person, you know, the first of anything, you're going to take the arrows, aren't you? You're stepping out into the breach. So it's going to take a brave woman to do that. And but it's going to, I think it'd be exciting. I really do. Mm. And from a player's perspective, I think this generation of young players are more equipped because they've been brought up in a different world. I think if you 20 years ago, I think it would have been so tough because of the mindset of the players that I first started. It was very macho, very masculine, but, and so it would have been difficult. But I think these young players are ready for it now. I really do. I think they'll she'll be judged on what her quality as a coach.
Because I think that's what I think as a player, I'd be like, if they're going to make me better, they're going to make the team better, they're going to get us to win things, then it doesn't matter, does it? So,
well, look, you didn't choose to go into coaching and managing. You went into media, punditry, and I think you're, you know, one of the trailblazers to do it as well in that side of it. How you look like you enjoy it, because there's a smile on your face all the time. You know, it seems like you love it, and and it's sort of that pathway that you want to do.
Yeah, and all the way through my football career, I've always enjoyed the media side. I remember in 2005, I got dropped from the Euros. We had the home Euros. I didn't get selected. Absolutely gutted. I just wanted to go away. You wanted to go on holiday, lay on a beach and just forget about it. And the BBC actually phoned me up and said, do you want to become, you know, a pundit and do a little bit on this? And I was like, nah, don't want to do it. Just want to get away.
Yeah.
And I got convinced, spoke to quite a few people, and they said, go and do it. Like, go and, you know, experience that side. And it was tough at first. Yeah. You're sort of commentating on your mates, your teammates, your team that you want to be playing in. But I loved it. And I got a real buzz out of it.
Yeah. Did you still play in there? You got left out for what, form or for injury?
Yeah, well, I had a niggly, I had plantar fasciitis, which was just a niggly injury, but I wasn't performing well. Yeah, it's just like an annoying injury. I could still play. So my form wasn't where it should have been, and I should have got left out. You know, I wasn't in the levels that I should have been playing. But I just, when I finished, I thought I got a real buzz, and it was something that I've probably not had doing other things apart from playing football. So whenever there was like, I don't know, like an FA Cup final, or if I ever got an opportunity to talk, I would always be, you know, a lot of people would go, nah, it's not for me. Whereas I was always, yeah, I enjoy this. So as soon as that was the thing, you know, about we spoke before the show about I haven't officially retired.
Yeah.
Still think I can get out of there.
We all
but
do.
I think, but I think it's because the media started to take off. So I started to do more media and I had to make that decision. But I always thought, well, if it doesn't quite work, maybe I could go back and play for a little bit.
So look, we're, obviously we've all got into punditry and media, you know, and it's, you get that, it's, that buzz is very similar to playing, isn't it? You know, that, when you go on live and you go, right, the countdown, you know, your auto cue and stuff, and that is same as going out and preparing for a game, or, you know, the first, you know, the last 5 seconds before kickoff.
I don't know what you guys think, but like, I get this thing whenever I do a game, and it's I get like a little knot when I see the pitch. As I walk to the pitch, I'm like, I get a little knot in my stomach, and I get a little bit of sadness. I think, ah, mate, I'd love to be out of there. Like, every game without fail, I have a moment. I'm standing there by the pitch. I think, I'd do anything to be like my boots on there, and I quickly check, you know what I mean, check myself. But I get that little, so there is part of me that it, I know what you're saying, Sidney, like I get that buzz from it, but I'm I want more, do you know what I mean, so I'll be like, one day I'll probably step into management and see if that gives me a bit. Every, I don't know, like, every game without fail I have a little 30 seconds to myself, especially if a ball gets rolled over to me and I just pop it back one time.
Well, you don't pop it back one time. I've seen you take it, you put a step home, you straight back chop, and you do a couple of hiccups and you go, bosh, have that.
Just let them know what it's all about. It.
But it's funny because some players finish, don't they, and just, they don't want anything to do with it. You know, they just walk away and that's it. Or they don't miss the actual playing side. They might go into media, but they don't miss playing at all, which I find quite strange because, I'm the same as you. I still love the game. Still love playing.
Frank Lampard, don't miss it at all. Frank.
Really?
Rio, don't miss it.
Wow.
Yeah. Mad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can still play though, couldn't you?
Certain
you've got a cameo. You've definitely got 10-15 minutes.
I've got 10-15 in me. Yeah, in the right team. I'm still out there. Terry's over there. Some of the places he's tried to send me as well. My lord, we won't go into that.
So with the media stuff, is there anything that you enjoy most more than others? Like, do you prefer co-coms, or is it studio work, analysis, or is it just the whole?
Yeah, I like a bit of everything, really. Yeah, so I love the co-coms. It's different when you're in the game, isn't it? And you can probably see a little bit more tactically and stuff. But I love doing, the sort of, you know, you've got to just do updates. That's quite good because you've got to like paint a picture, so that's slightly different. So I like doing it all, because at first it was just about, I wanted to just be a pundit. I thought that's like what everyone sort of did and everyone went into. But then when you do the other things, you have to use different skills, don't you?
Talk to me about the troll sort of situation as well, because that's, you know, you've got to be thick-skinned to be in football anyway. But then when you come on the other side of it, I mean, yourself, Alex Scott, Karen Carney, you know, really high up there in terms of getting this sort of ball rolling about trolls. And how hard has it been for you and online abuse?
It is tough, it's one of those that when you commentate on women's football, it's normally very nice, you know, a lot of the stuff that you get back is just quite complimentary, and you know, we enjoy the coverage and stuff. And then as soon as I moved over into the men's game, you do get a lot on social media, you get and it's, you know, I always prepare, I'm like super prepared, I have like reams and reams of notes, and I, you know, spend ages doing all my like prep on players and you know, different stats and stuff, and then you might just say like one thing slightly wrong, which when it's live, it's quite,
it happens
and straight away someone will pick up on it. If you slightly, I don't know, maybe don't say somebody's name quite right, or you just have to accept it, and you shouldn't accept it, but you sort of
do you read them yourself, or do you engage in the social media yourself? Is it something you do enjoy?
There's a lot of good, I think, comes out of social media, isn't there? You know, you see a lot of good things. There was something quite recently where there was a player for Doncaster Bells, I don't know if you've seen that, where she couldn't afford her the operation. So she put it out there, people sort of tweeted a message, and in the end, I think it was Gary Lineker ended up paying pretty much for her operation, which it shouldn't have happened in the first place, but the fact social media can be used for good charity work and things. So I think it's important that we stay on there, and that, you know, interaction with the fans is a nice thing to do. And you get so many, you might get sort of 20 comments and 19 of them might be so lovely.
Yeah.
And you just get the one comment that's not nice, and that's the one you sort of remember.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've just got used to now. I don't read it throughout a show. I do it probably the next day or afterwards. Yeah.
Which is wrong. You say that, but you just get used to it now. Yeah. It shouldn't be that, should it?
No.
You know,
no.
It should be. I mean, can you see it progressing and you know... look, there's always going to be the minority, we understand that, but can you see the social media platforms clamping down and sort of helping you, really?
They need to. They need to. And I know that people get it much worse than what I've had it. You know, there's some awful things that we've seen on a regular basis, and I think that it keeps happening. They have to do more, don't they?
Yeah.
They have to do more to try and stop it or do something to the people that are sort of saying these abusive comments.
They do. It's this new tool, social media, like we're all connected, and sometimes you're right, it brings out the worst thing. And then you've got the issue of freedom of speech as well, which comes into it and everything. So it's such a tough thing. I mean, I personally, I don't know about you, Cindy, but I don't really, I'm on Instagram, but I'm not on it properly. You know, I'm not popping and I don't engage, but I see when I'm doing the punditry, I see where the lads are on it all the time, scrolling through all this.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm
like
that, no. So I've never really engaged with it, but if you are someone who engages with it, it must be so difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I'm sure it's the same as the women's game as well. As soon as you get on the coach after, you see players now back into my career straight on their phones,
really,
a good game or a bad game, and they're looking. You know, they're looking to see all the plaudits or. You know, what's being said about me is like you're half looking at it, and then it's a few giggles down the back of the coach where someone's like, oh, you know, he's getting absolutely battered.
It's the worst thing there is,
it must be so. And these lads as well, it's second nature. They've been brought up with it. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
definitely.
I'm still at that age where for some reason they've just missed me. I've not something that's in my sphere. I don't really do it well, but. You're right, for young players, it's not going away because they're going to. Everything's on the phone now, ain't it? So, it must be so difficult.
Well, look, we absolutely love your work that you're doing on TV. Right, so let's crack on. The next part is what really happened. So, what really happened? Well, we pick a moment from your career and we want to know more about it. So, I'm going to go back to 2012.
Oh, no, I'm so bad.
Your Doncaster Bells debut. You scored your first goal and then 10 minutes after, you get stretched off.
Yeah.
So. Take us back to that game that day.
Did my ACL, I was, because again, we were talking off the show and I was sort of saying I wanted to sign for Doncaster Bells just because they're just a team that growing up, they were always so successful and you know, they played at the Keep Moat and I knew the manager really well. He was, you know, John Buckley, ex-left winger. So he was sort of, he was saying, I can make you a better player, you know, in your last stages of your career and stuff. And first game, scored my first goal, made up and then, did my ACL, which was just... I did my ankle. I dislocated my ankle and broke my leg sort of 10 years previous. Right. That was a nightmare to come back from. But my ACL was just frustrating. Mm. And I think because I was a little bit older as well. And obviously the Olympics were coming, they were around the corner. So I was in the squad of 30 for that.
So did you realise that something was bad? Did you know?
Yeah, I knew straight away. It was just, I was literally just blocking a ball down the line. So I was just, you know, something you do a million times, don't you, as a wide player. And just as I jumped and twisted funny, I just heard it snap and I knew straight away it was something pretty bad. And I got stretched off. So I think I was out about 9 or 10 months. Right. It took me, I thought I was going to come back in the 6-7 months. And then I pulled my calf just as I was like getting back into full training.
How was you after that, Sue? Did you ever feel like you got back to your best after that?
No.
Because I was the same. When after my ACL, I'd done it in 2010. And I don't think, looking back on it now, I never quite hit the heights as a player.
Yeah.
And
was that,
after that.
Was that physically or was that mentally? Or was that a bit of both?
Definitely physically, Sidney, because I didn't just do my ACL. I'd done everything. ACL, PCL, MCL, both cartilages. It's like... And the same thing, it was a generic, just a turn.
Right.
And the doctor, I remember the doctor saying to me, like, how did you do this? Was it a bad tackle? Because he said, like, this was a really bad one. Like, my knee was hanging on by one ligament. And then so afterwards, the way I played, I was twisting and turning. I lost a yard and I couldn't twist and turn as quickly as... And also, if I misjudged... Know when you catch... If you catch a ball wrong, it hurts, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So... It really hurt on my knee. If I caught a volley wrong or something like that, it wouldn't just be the normal pain where you go, oh, I caught that at the end of my toe. It'll be like, it'll just send a shooting pain.
Right.
Yeah, so it's a horrible thing. But I think I look at players now who come back from ACLs and they're coming back in 6 months and they look fine. So it'd be interesting what they do in terms of getting them back now. What's the new things move on, don't
you?
Yeah. How was you throughout that sort of rehab spell? Because look, we've all been injured. I've been injured as well. Injury, unfortunately, ruined. Well, I say ruined my career. Ended my career. But with that 9 months that you was out there, you go through some dark days. But did you have the support that you had there, or how did you cope?
Yeah, I was quite lucky. I had quite a lot of support, and you know, I went to the EIS in Sheffield, and so my physio was Jess Ennis's physio. So I remember walking in, and Jess Ennis was walking out first day. And I thought, wow, I've got a good physio here. And he was brilliant. And I just worked with him sort of one-to-one until I got to the stage where I could go back to the club and sort of work with the club physio and the club doctor and stuff. But, yeah, it's just hard, isn't it? Because you're in a gym and you're working and you see your teammates out on the training field. And that's difficult. That was even going to games. I used to hate going to games. And that sounds awful because you want to support your team. But I was just like, I just want to be out there. And you know that it's a long-term thing. So it's not like... I don't know, it's a tweak of your hammy and you're going to be back in a couple of weeks. You know that it's like 9-10 months, and that was the I had to really set myself a little target. So I don't know if you did the same. So it was like, after a month I want to be doing this, and after 2 months I want to be doing this, and you know, that's the way I got through it. But then when you have those setbacks, that's when it's hard, because you know, like I say, I thought I was coming back and then I pulled my car off. So you go through it all again, you're like, oh God, when am I actually going to get back?
And they always put the gym that they face in the training, pitches. Why do they do that?
I know.
You're on a treadmill or you're just on the rower, and there's like, you just see the teammates training outside. Yeah. It's a killer.
You actually work harder, don't you? I think when you're injured.
It's a joke. I remember coming back from my knee at Cobham. I wanted to go out. I was on this bike every day. I went, listen, I'm done with this bike. I said to the physio, I need to get out on the bike. I've never been on a road bike before, so I didn't know the rules and regulations, you know, the helmet and all that. So they found me a bike at Cobham, and I didn't take my phone like an idiot. I went, right, I'm going. I'm just going to go for a steady one for like an hour. I went about an hour and a half away, and the the chains come off, Keys. Like, the chains come off. I'm there in my lycras. The deeper starts, sorry, like, at the height of playing for Chelsea. I was gone for about 4 or 5 hours. Everyone's thinking I've come off, like they're ringing the authorities, like they couldn't find me. Yeah, so that was an adventure.
You don't know no one's number. You don't know. you just click a button and they just go through. You're like, what's the number of the training ground?
Yeah, so yeah, I remember that. And then what was important in my rehab as well, because I know what I'm like probably like you said, like, I didn't like going to the games. I said, look, they went through with the doc. They went through, like, you're going to be out for like, between 9 and 12 months with this one, because he's going to... It was two operations, bam, bam, bam. And okay, so we're gonna schedule in some rest and recuperation. Like, all right, then.
Nice.
Thought we're talking. He went, well, where do you want to go? I went, like, I'm like, is this on the club? And he went, I went, quite like Vegas. No, I'm serious. I'm like, all right, we can do that. Right, so I've got... And then Ricky Atten had a fight in Vegas.
You didn't.
Yeah. It was scheduled into my rehab, you know, like, like 1 month strength and conditioning, like this one, bang, 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 like Vegas, I had 5 days in Vegas.
So when it said Tuesday, Paul recovery, it weren't Wet Republic.
It was unreal.
Oh, brilliant.
Just doing my rehab in Vegas. They sent me over there for a little program, the lads, you know, a bit of paper.
Brilliant.
I got parked up for 5 days.
Chelsea lads might start getting in.
It's me in Sheffield. This one's in Vegas, all right, isn't it?
Let's get back to the Premier League. Look, who's caught you? Who's caught your eye so far this season, teams wise?
It's hard to pick them, isn't it, Zoom? Yeah. I mean, the top four. Yeah, you know, Man United have obviously still look like they've got problems, but I think I really genuinely don't know. See, that Chelsea, Man City, or Liverpool going to win this league, and. We have got three world-class football teams, proper world-class, like best in Europe. You got them three. Man United, I still think there's holes.
I was going to say that. You've not mentioned Man United. Are you counting them out? They got the squad, no, but...
Yeah. See, I think start of the season, I certainly thought that the players that they brought in, you look at Varane, what they needed. You look at Sancho's not quite sort of hit the heights, as he, that we expect. They just take a little bit of time to adapt. I'm sure he will.
Yeah.
And then the Ronaldo sign, I think everyone thought, wow, here we go. But yeah, they just don't look... They just look a little bit disjointed, don't they? Did they need that holding midfielder? I think they did, that world-class holding midfielder. Yeah. It just seems like teams... like. Tielemans just played the ball through the middle at ease, didn't it, the weekend? Yeah. So I just feel he's trying to sort out that middle of the park area.
Fred and McTominay, I don't feel like... I really like McTominay, but as a pair, I'd like McTominay... Pogba in that position, I think, he almost needs to give himself to the team, City. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, in terms of, like, he's a great player, Pogba. But what Man United need is him to play deeper and really be disciplined and give the ball to Ronaldo, give the ball to Sancho, Greenwood.
Yeah.
You know.
He's not the same player, is he, for Man U, where he's for France. He just feels like there's so much more that he can give the Man United show.
Do you think Solskjaer can go to him and say, do that for me for a season? This is and he can do it disciplined for 90 minutes? You know, because you can't have too many Greenwood, Sancho's, Fernandes.
The attacking threat that he's got is phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, you need that base. And McTominay gives you a life.
You need the cement between the bricks.
You do. I like that, Sid. You like that? I'm going to use that one.
But you think they're always going to score goals, aren't they, with the quality that they have? But it's more like individual moments of brilliance rather than like collectively as a team.
Well, look, they're on a tough run at the moment. They've had some poor results. They come up against Liverpool on the weekend. If Liverpool get a result, can you see Ollie losing his job? Not so much straight after, but can you see him, or do you reckon he's here for the season?
Who's out there? Who's out there who would go in? I think I'm going to throw a name out there. Listen, I don't like doing this because I don't know Ollie, but he's a... I suppose if you're Manchester United manager, there's going to be
pressure.
So,
I think Conte would be the obvious choice.
Right.
You know, if it gets to that. And Ollie's
with that attacking sort of lineup, because he's quite sort of rigid, isn't he? I know he sort of likes a counter-attacking team as well, but...
But I think at some point them players have got to look at themselves.
Yeah.
I think Gary Neville, I think he was excellent when he I think he broke it down in terms of like the off the ball. It's what Manchester United need to do. It's the pressure, and they should be fit enough and strong enough to do it for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
They?
Yeah.
Off the ball. And Conte, when he was at Chelsea, off the ball they become so resolute. He still had Hazard, Pedro, great players. I think he'd be an option. So I think Ole needs a good run. But we've been here before with Ole, by the way, and he's turned it around.
Yeah. You're right.
So, you know,
I think he'd give him that organisation which they need defensively. So maybe that's a good shout, because there's certainly pressure on Ole, isn't there? But like you say, he's managed to turn it around and what game to do it in, the game against Liverpool.
Well, I mean, talking of big clubs, we speak about a manager now that's been linked with Spurs in the summer, Graham Potter from Brighton. Yeah. How impressed have you been? You know, I finished at Brighton, so I just sort of come to the end of my career, just see him sort of stepping in, so watching him train and do this stuff. But how impressed have you been with him and Brighton? Because he's got on playing some really good stuff, hasn't he?
Yeah. No, I think he's different classes. I love what he does. I love how his teams are set up, organised. You know, he don't look like your archetypal manager. He's of the new school. Obviously, he's been a player, but he got into coaching early and he's learned his craft. He's come back. I think everything at Brighton, I think, is outstanding. I love it, and I love the way they play. And I think people are going to be knocking on the door for him.
He's definitely a forward-thinking manager. I mean, so you'd have watched a lot of his games, and he's one of them that's not afraid to go and go right, three changes.
Yeah.
Start with one formation, end up with a different formation in the game. He's a real forward-thinking, you know, on the front foot all the time manager, which is, I think, what is required to be that next step up. So, look, they play Man City on the weekend. Do you think you could go and get a result?
Tough one against Man City, isn't it?
He ain't that good, Sid. Come on, please.
Hey, watch this. We'll see. We'll see. We talk about experienced managers. So you're an Everton fan, is that right?
Yeah.
What was your feelings when Rafa Benitez took the hot seat there?
I was quite mixed. I think that,
really?
Yeah, that I had so many sort of Everton fans, friends that were messaging me going, "What on earth are Everton doing? Yeah. You know, this is a bad move." And I was a bit like, I see that because I see the whole small club and the whole Liverpool connection, but at the same time, he's a very good manager. And I thought Everton needed something, a bit of structure. Obviously, Carlo Ancelotti, you know, what a coup that was for Everton. Yeah. But then he went, and they were linked with a lot of names. And I was just a case of just give him the benefit of the doubt, let's see what happens. And he's done brilliant. You know, I think with what he's had in terms of, you know, injuries to key players, Richarlison, Calvert-Lewin out.
Yeah.
I think the drop off then to Iwobi and Rondon is quite a big drop off, quite a big gap between those two. But he's got them organised. He's got them playing a certain way, because you could see at the start of the season he was like, what's Everton's assets? Calvert-Lewin, get him in the box, get deliveries into the box to him, because he'll score your goals. And then he, bless him, went and got injured. But the two signings, you know, have been absolutely brilliant.
Right, so talking about Rafa, let's go back to one of his former clubs, Newcastle. We've just learnt this morning about Steve Bruce.
Wow.
Left the club by mutual consent. What's your whole views on, first of all, the takeover, and then obviously manager-wise, but takeover-wise, it's huge really, isn't it, takeover-wise?
Yeah, it's huge, and it's something that Newcastle have wanted for many, many years, and you kept thinking it was going to happen, it didn't quite happen. You could just see by the celebration of the Newcastle fans, they were absolutely delighted, and they're obviously one of the big boys, aren't they? They're looking to...
The big boy.
Yeah, the big boy, yeah, with the amount of money, and it, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. You could see by the performance at the weekend, there's a lot that needs to be done there. There's a lot of players that need to come in. You know, I was going through the squad, and I was thinking, if they're going to win the Premier League, they're going to go and win the Champions League, how many players realistically would stay in that side? Maybe
one or two.
Yeah.
So Maxim, but he needs to kick on. It's interesting, you know, because of the only benefit they got coming in now, the Saudis, and taking over it, is they've seen the Man City project, they've seen the Chelsea project, and they could learn from that. So what they've got to stay up, so there needs to be three or four players that come in January capable of making sure that there's no danger of them getting relegated.
Do you think people are overlooking this? Because there's a lot of talk about Champions League and winning this and winning that, but they're banging trouble, man.
And also the fact that they've got rid of Steve Bruce, 1,000 games at the weekend, right? Yeah. The first thing you walk through the door is, right, we need to be in this Premier League, because that will set us. If we're not in the Premier League, it sets our project back 3 years. Yeah. So we need to, first of all, let's secure that. Right, there's a budget for that. Right, what manager's capable of keeping us in the Premier League? Let's have a look who's available out there. Steve Bruce would come into that thing. So for me, you go, and Newcastle fans won't thank me for saying this, but you go, right, we'll keep Steve. You get three or four players in. But what happens, City, is you bring them three or four players in. Let's just throw names out there. Aaron Ramsey, maybe. Mm. Jesse Lingard, maybe. Yeah. You know, you bring them players in. Now, you stay up. Next year, you finish 10th. Then the year after that, all of a sudden, you're bringing in more players in. But now you're bringing the next run of players.
Yeah.
You know, and then them players that you brought in to keep you up, they're on 5-year contracts. And now, all of a sudden, you've got a squad of 25 players. You're going for Champions League football now, 3 years down the line. But you've got 7 or 8 players in your squad that are surplus to requirements now.
Yeah.
So it happened at Man City, you know, when they got the initial players in.
Yeah.
And then when the real big hitters come in, then you've got to get rid of them. And they don't want to go because they're on big money.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to spend money.
Yeah.
But first things first, you've got to stay in the division.
Yeah.
So, do you think they're going to like be clever with the loan market, like bring in the players that aren't playing at some of the big clubs?
No reputable football club is going to. They know
they've got the money.
So they go, we want to take them on loan. Right, we'll have. First of all, don't talk to us unless you give us a £5 million loan fee.
Yeah.
And so they're going to get. It's going to be difficult for them. I question who they've got on the football side of things, because who's going to help them? You know, because you can have all the money in the world and it not be important, but you don't want to get effectively taken for a ride. And there's plenty of people in this game who will take people like that for a ride. So they need to do it very clever.
You need to make a strategy, don't you?
I was going to say, this is totally different takeover to the likes of the Man City one and the Chelsea one, because there was a nucleus already.
Yeah.
In them squads, wasn't there? Whereas this is near enough a total rebuild, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it is. You need a strategy. You need people in the right positions making those big decisions. And cause like we've said, it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to be a gradual process, isn't it? And the first thing now is make sure they stay in the league.
Yeah, they need good players through the door, City.
Yeah.
Good players who've known the Premier. That's what I said, top of my head, I said Aaron Ramsey, he's not playing at Juventus. Yeah. Good player. You know he's better than what you've got.
Yeah.
Jesse Lingard, he's not playing enough. Maybe he'll fancy that as a challenge.
Definitely.
You bring two of them players and plus another two, you probably say you fancy them over 20 games, whatever's left once you get to January, to finish above Burnley, finish above Norwich, finish above Watford, finish above, who else is down there? Well, it just if you finish above them, you stay up.
Yeah, of course. You know what I mean? So, look, you spoke there about having someone in charge behind the scenes. Mm. Now let's talk about, obviously, the hot seat, because Steve Bruce has gone.
Yeah.
Mm. Who do you see? I mean, they've got money to go out and buy someone if they wanted to, but who could you see taking that job?
So who's available, isn't it? And I suppose it's got to be someone that's going to be able to build and it's starting from a position where, first and foremost, they have to make sure that they don't get relegated. Yeah. Then it's a case of building. It depends how long term it's going to be. Mm. Then it's a case of, are you going to be challenging for the Premier League at some point? Mm. So it's like, who's available? I don't know. I know Martinez was one of the names that
so would you say it's more experience that they need rather than someone like a Steven Gerrard or a Frank Lampard, because they're all getting touted in there, aren't they?
Yeah, I think experience is a must.
I agree. I think like I said, you want stages, isn't it? You need someone like Martinez. He knows the Premier League. Eddie Howe knows the Premier League. Conte, I think we're just assuming Conte's going to sit there and go, hold on,
yeah.
No thanks. Come back to me in 2 years' time.
That's the one, isn't it? It's not necessarily. You don't really want to go in there and be the first manager or that first sort of crop of players. You want to be the next load that goes in when it's just got to the next stage.
Because imagine that. You bring a big name manager in, right? You still got November and December to navigate with that group of players, right? I think Steve went out there the other day against Spurs and he went, right, he knew he was on the way out. He must have done. And they played an open football, which is what the Geordies want. They want to play, but they're not capable of doing that because they haven't got the security at the back. They were just getting played through by a very average Spurs team.
Yeah.
And if they need five at the back, what Steve was doing with them to get the results for, they got decent bit of pace on the break, and they can't compete in the Premier League if they open up. Do you know what I mean? They ain't got the players certainly in the back end of the pitch to keep enough clean sheets. They need bodies in that position.
Not sure they got the fitness levels either. You know, it seemed to be like first 15 minutes they could do it, couldn't they? It was real intense pressing, but they just couldn't sustain that over 90 minutes.
Right, talking about the managerial hot seat, we've got some Coral odds for you here. Coral will give you 4-1 if you think Paolo Fonseca, the former Roma manager, will be the next Newcastle boss, or you can get odds of 9-2 if you think Frank Lampard will be the one to replace Steve Bruce. Think about any of them two?
We had Frank on a few weeks ago. We know he's itching to get back. I think that's a safe. I think Frank's a safe pair of hands. I know he's only been managing for a few years, two and a half years, but he knows the Premier League inside out. He can lean on.
Yeah.
He could lean on so many people. He's got his uncle Harry. Who can lead? I think Frank would be a safe pair of hands. Yeah. I think, and quite possibly Frank, with his experience of playing at Chelsea, he's had a front row seat of all the, you know, he knows how a dressing room will be. Say, for instance, you're a Newcastle player, and they pull off the coup of all coups, and they bring in Icardi into the dressing room. He knows how that's going to affect the dressing room. How's that's going to effect, do you know what I mean? So there's a currency in that. I think Frank's a sensible bet for the job.
And do you think he would have that level of respect when they start signing echelon players and they're coming under Frank? He's got that level because he's been a player and he's done well as a manager as well. Yeah. He would
instant create respect. I think so. And I totally agree. I think all the experiences that he's got as a player and as a manager as well. I agree.
Okay. Right, let's get on to the Coral Football Super Series. I'm going to ask you each four simple questions about Man United versus Liverpool. Quick fire answers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Quick fire.
So, who will win the match? Man United versus
Liverpool. Sue's not going to back Liverpool.
Can I say a draw?
Say what you want.
No, I'm going to go Liverpool.
Really?
Through gritted teeth. Yeah.
I'm going to go Liverpool. I think they're,
an away winner, Old Trafford, I mean, they're in form.
Yeah.
Who's going to get the first goal?
Got to be the main man in Salah. Salah, mate, you can't miss at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we go Mane.
Mane,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one for you. How many corners? This is a funny one.
This is a funny one. And I don't think I've got it right yet, have I? No. All right. I'm gonna go 12.
It's normally around that 9, 10, 11 mark, isn't it?
12, I'm gonna go.
12 corners.
11.
How many players will be carded?
Feisty. I feel like Manchester United will be ill-disciplined in this game, especially if they go a goal down at home.
You see it being feisty now? Some of the players that are there?
No, I think it'll be not feisty. I think it'll be temperamental and catty. Yeah. I think the Manchester United players, I think they're under huge pressure to win this game. Mm-hmm. And if it ain't, I think there could be a little bit of a toys at the pram moment, I think, by some of them. So I think there'll be, I think, five cards.
Ooh. Two cards?
I think three.
Three?
Yeah.
Okay.
I fancy sending off as well.
Wow.
But yeah, I think that'll be a decent bet.
It's a new one.
Yeah.
Okay, people at home, you can head over to coral.co.uk, answer the questions correctly to win cash prizes, but please gamble responsibly. We are big advocates of gambling responsibly here. More Coral odds has just come in. Coral will give you 40-1 if you think Mo Salah will score a hat-trick at the weekend. I think that is phenomenal odds.
I do.
Yeah, I do.
40-1. Yeah. We said Salah could give you the first goal scorer. Mm. A few penalties, maybe. 40-1 you can get for a hat-trick.
And you're arguably talking about the best player in the world at the moment, aren't you? Yeah. In current form. So it's decent.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Well, Sue, absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Sue.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
You've made the debut go really seamless to me.
Can we just say a little mention about Sidi's debut? Well, in the hot seat as well.
I know, brilliant.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
First impressions count and might be here for the next one. We'll see. Remember, you can find us on Joe's YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be listening to All To Play For podcast brought to you by Joe and Coral. See you soon.
You've been listening to All To Play For, brought to you by Joe and Coral.